This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy weekend, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Fiona Deering from Lara, Victoria in Australia. And you are listening to a special Australian edition of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 8, episode 1538, brought to you today by Remote Coach and Chamberlain's Law Firm. Good morning, Horse World.
So this is Anything Can Happen Thursday.
Everyone has a place. They're not just horses, they're part of my family. I come from a land down under.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the weekend. We're so glad you're joining us on this special Saturday edition of Horses in the Morning. We're going to be doing more of this as time goes on, and we're going to be having more new weekend editions coming up in the next couple of months. But of course, Fiona's not new. We just moved her to the weekend. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We figured that we had to record this anyway, so
yeah.
Because Fiona just will not get up at 3 a.m. to do the show when we're doing it live.
Do you know, I'd get up. I just don't know that my guests
yeah,
would.
They're probably not.
Yeah.
They're not quite
and
as
you know,
dedicated.
I could be drunk, so.
Yeah. So it's not a problem. We're happy to have you still, and we're happy that we're able to do these weekend editions as well. The weekend editions are not live. They're put out on a recorded feed, so you'll find them in all your players and on the website. Well, we have coming up on today's show several things that we think you'll enjoy. So why don't you tell us about them, Fiona?
Sure. We have the lovely auditor, Anne Mabardi, from up north in Queensland, Australia. And we also have Jess Stalling, who has had a sensational Melbourne Royal show in the last couple of weeks. So we're really looking forward to hearing all her news.
And of course, Chamberlain's Law Firm will be back with their legal tip
sure will.
Of the month. So we'll have that in addition to everything else. But now you describe for people where exactly you live in Australia.
So I live in a town called Lara, which is about 40 minutes west of Melbourne City. So
that's in the southern
down
part.
Down south.
And I saw on the news that you guys were getting inundated with an unusual amount of rain.
Been a little bit wet.
And ice too, right?
And yeah, rain, hail and wind. Rugging your horse could become a competitive kite event. I'm waiting for my feet to lift the ground. Of course, if my horse was smaller, I probably wouldn't have quite so much rug to throw over him.
But I got to tell you, so you're just ending your winter now, right?
We're in the second month of spring. Or I did hear someone call it yesterday, sprinter.
Springshire
is a bit weird, but you know, yeah. So South Australia, and well, I guess Western Australia as well, but South Australia and Victoria are just flooded. They're saying it's the second most highest rainfall in September that we've had on record. You know, roads are closed, dams are bursting, rivers have burst their banks. It's all happening down here.
And so that means you haven't ridden much?
No. My horse can't stand up on dry land. He's a 17 one-hand standard bred. But we did go out for his, this is a few weeks ago now, but for his 10th ride, a friend came and picked us up and we went out on a trail ride. And he was a superstar.
Yay!
So, yeah, he had semi-trailers going past. He didn't care. He didn't care if he was in front or behind or next to my friend Sarah's horse. He did care about the sheep, got a little bit concerned about the sheep. Yeah, I don't think he'd seen a sheep before. I could feel his heart beating in my leg. But that's okay because he spun around so he couldn't see them and then he relaxed. So I don't think he's actually the sharpest tool in the shed, really.
See,
he literally did. He did a big...
We don't have the sheep so much as we have cows, and they all get scared of the cows.
No, well, it makes sense because he's pretty scared of the small ponies where he's kept as well. But, he literally did a 180 spin and then went, oh, they've gone. Like, you fool. So, he was a superstar. So we had a great ride. But, yeah, just haven't been able to do much because it's been so wet. And we're on clay where we are.
Oh,
so
slippery.
Yeah, it's not just wet, it's slippery. So anyway, look, the dams are full, but, not so good for the farmers who have got crops getting really wet and underwater and stuff. And, yeah.
Well, we're about to do the same. As you're hearing this, actually we're recording it a couple days before, so as you're hearing this, we've either been totally inundated in Florida or everything's fine. I don't know which yet. So one or the other is going to have happened by now.
This recording might be the only thing left.
That's right. It might be. So do you have any updates or news for us that you wanted to share? Oh, you had a Daily Winnie, didn't you? We didn't do that yet.
I did.
All right. Well, let's do the Daily Winnie.
My Daily Winnie is again weather-themed, and it goes out to every poor person who's up on the Wimmera showing circuit at the moment. The Wimmera show circuit is a really big collection, I guess, of quite geographically close agricultural shows in Western Victoria, where people will take all their horses out and try and qualify them for royal shows, because in about 3 weeks you can get 20-odd shows in. But so many of the shows have had to be cancelled because of the rain, and these people are out there camping and shows are being cancelled the day before, and, you know, obviously it's a massive thing for the agricultural societies as well, because it's such a big money raiser for them, and shows are trying to be rescheduled, and it's just, you know, it can't be fun up there. So I'm thinking of you all, guys.
Jeez.
Yeah, camping with your horses in this weather. No thanks.
No, camping period. No,
well, that too, yeah. See, I need a glamper.
That's right. You do.
Yeah.
Well, there are big, I don't know if you call them horse trailers down there. We went over this before. But are the really big ones like we have here with the living quarters and everything as popular there? Or do you have more of the trucks like they have in England?
There are more trucks if you've obviously got more than two or three horses to take on a circuit like that. You'd have a truck, and there are some pretty fancy ones. But, there are also a lot of people taking one or two horses with just their two-horse float that doesn't have any extended living quarters in it or anything, and you're in the car or the tent.
Oh, there you go. The old-fashioned way.
Yeah. So, look, it goes from the people doing it on a shoestring through to the people doing it with the, you know, massive truck with the fridge and the TV and all the rest in it, I guess, and the washing machine. See, that'd be good. I'd want a washing machine with me if it's up there now. And a dryer.
That'd be good.
This is why I'm not a camping girl.
All right, let's go to our first guest then. We have one of our good auditors, right?
Yeah, Anne from Queensland. I can't wait to hear about her because she rides Clydesdales and does some pretty high, I think she does quite a lot of dressage and showing with them.
And it is appropriate for our Year of the Listener.
Good morning, Anne.
Hello, Fiona.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, Glenn and I have just been talking about the weather in Victoria and South Australia, which is, you know, a little bit wet. But you're from Queensland, which is way more north. Have you been getting, are you wet up there, or are your feet dry?
No, our feet are dry. We've actually had first decent rain in about 3 years through winter. So we've got this weird green stuff on the ground, which is unusual for us. I think it's called grass.
Yeah, we've got some of it too, except there's also weird wet stuff everywhere.
No. Luckily, we've missed what you've been getting, so I don't envy you.
No, it's not been fun. Now, I've been looking forward to talking to you because you have Clydesdales, don't you?
I do. I've got two, and my daughter's got one. and my brother-in-law at last count had 14.
Whoa.
14?
Yeah.
That's a lot
yeah,
of hay.
He had luckily he's got 200 acres. So, yeah, and where he lives, it's grass all year round.
Oh, lucky him.
So, yes. Yeah, very yeah.
So
lucky.
So does he yeah. run a breeding operation or?
Yeah, he did for yep. quite a few years. They actually, him and his wife actually imported a Canadian stallion about 15 years ago because she was Canadian.
Yep.
And so they've been crossing the Australian bloodlines with this Canadian bloodlines and produced a few beautiful horses. Two of mine are from his sort of family lines, and then the my big gelding that you like, Fiona, is a good old Australian stock.
Nice. And so, now
yeah.
here comes the best part, because you ride the Clydes and do dressage, don't
we
you?
We do official dressage on our Clydesdales.
And I am looking at a picture of her, and let me tell you what, that makes quite a sight with all the feathers and you and your dressage outfit. Yeah.
We fought the theory that Clydesdales shouldn't be ridden, and you will break them and you'll wreck them and wreck the breed, and we've proved them wrong, hopefully.
What a load of crap that is, by the way, just saying.
I'd like to see a Clydesdale broken by being ridden.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, it'll break them, all 800 kilos.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because you're going to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's all right for them to pull carts and slides and logs and plough, and but you can't put 70 kilos on top of them and ride them. Yeah, so we hold our own riding. We're not superstars, but we have fun, and we usually stay in the arena.
Well, that's good, because you know a 20-meter circle can be hard for an enormous Clydesdale.
It is. I think I've mentioned. My big boy.
Yeah. How tall is your big guy?
He's only 16'3", but he weighs 800 kilos. So he's the big old-fashioned sort of buffy Clydesdale shape. So, and 20-metre circle was tricky to start with.
Yeah. He looks very similar. I know you and I have spoken on Facebook.
He's the same as Heckle.
Yeah. I have a student who has a beautiful Clydesdale called Heckle, and yours boy looks very, very much like him.
Yeah.
And he's a ridden Clydesdale as well. He does everything. He jumps too. I tell you what, you hear him coming when he lands.
Ours, well, my baby doesn't jump yet. She's not quite five, so I'm still looking after her joints.
Yeah.
Leo's jumped, and my daughter's actually jumped a meter show jump class, and 80-centimeter cross-country class.
Wow.
Yeah, we've cross-countryed both of the older ones.
Wow. They love jumping.
They do love jumping. Yeah. I mean, I've done 50 centimetres, which in reality they just step over, but I'm a chook when it comes to jumping.
I figure I'm too. I used to jump. I figure I'm too old to leave the ground by that far now, particularly when you're already on 16'3", 17 hands.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I agree. I love the thrill. Love the thrill of the cross country course, but I'd happily run past the jumps.
Let's just gallop past through the bush.
Totally understand.
Yeah. I think we should do a pairs cross country course without the jumps. I'll bring Heckle up.
we should. It would be good. Imagine the noise.
I know. You'd hear us from another state. So had you grown up riding, and were Clydesdales always a part of your life?
No. I played on horses as a kid. I was a city kid, but my uncle had a farm, and, you know, once a month, once every 2 months, we used to go down the farm, and apparently I would be on his old stock horse from the moment we got there till the moment we left.
Fantastic. But,
and then as life does, my daughter ended up with a 30-year-old Welsh mountain pony who'd been gelded at 20 when he took on a Clydesdale through a barbed wire fence. So when they took out his eye, they also gelded him. So she ended up with Gamelin somehow, and we ended up then moving to Acreage, and she was doing the whole pony club thing, and we sort of accidentally bought a Clydesdale one night due to too much alcohol.
Fantastic work.
Yeah, I know. It was very well done. It was good. We even did the financial transaction and everything. And we were going to do the traditional stuff. I know. We ended up with this unhandled 8-year-old Clydesdale who's pretty much done his own thing. We knew nothing. You know,
perfect,
we helped
purchase.
Friends. Yeah, it was really done with lots of thought. And yeah. And we were going to do, he didn't live very long. He colicked and we lost him.
Oh.
And then we sort of, the bug was well and truly there. And my brother-in-law by that time had swapped from the Welsh Mountain Ponies to Clydesdales, as you do.
Wow.
And we decided, yeah, a bit of a jump. Yep. We decided we'd do the whole Clydey thing. And then it was either buy the wagons, buy the trucks, or pay for the kids' school fees. So Leo wasn't being worked very much and he was sitting at home in the paddock doing nothing. And one day I decided it was time to throw a saddle on. So at 48 years old, I had my first ever riding lesson.
Oh, wow.
And all I wanted to do was do a walk trot test and stay in the arena. And we ended up doing official novice and, you know, holding our own. So the bug the bug hit at about 48.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I love those stories. You still would have had to buy a really big trailer for him, though.
I have now, yeah. It's a huge trailer. It fits two in quite well with a bit of bit of weight to spare and a bit of space. Yeah.
Now, is your husband horsey?
He's their best friend.
Mm-hmm.
He's your typical horse husband, Glenn.
Yep, feed some carrots.
He loves them. He brushes them. He'll hold my hand when I'm howling because something's going wrong. But no, he doesn't ride.
Does he clean stalls?
He used to do all the heavy horse stuff. No, but ours live outside.
Oh,
no, he doesn't pick up. He never cleans paddocks. No. He looks after the house yard.
Yep.
That's his thing, and I do the paddocks.
You'd probably prefer it that way anyway. There's less bitching.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's no disagreement. You know,
right.
I know I've got to clean paddocks.
And there's none of this, you're not doing it right either, which we always hear from the, you know, your side.
He does still get that. You know, you back the trailer not quite properly. Yeah, no, I can still be guilty of that one.
Oh, I'm not allowed to drive the horses in the trailer. She drives. I'd never do it right. I go too fast. I go too slow. It's something's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I must admit, that's the same here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll do it when he has to.
And I don't want the responsibility. Just let her do it. You know, she's just sitting over there being a nervous wreck anyway. So,
perfectly right. No, I agree with you. And I think he does too. Yeah. And Greg's got a car, so he's building a little car. So between us, I stay out of his way and he stays out of mine. So it works well.
Perfect marriage. Now, how did you discover the Horse Radio Network?
I commute an hour a day to work and Greg and I used to both work in the city together, so we'd come up to town together. And then he changed jobs and moved out of the city and normal free-to-air radio was driving me nuts, so I just went looking and, found a podcast and I think I've been listening now for 5 years.
Yay!
5 or 6 years.
Wow!
Yeah.
Now, do you...
I'm always a couple of weeks behind.
That's okay. We'll forgive you. So now, do you listen to other podcasts as well? I'm always interested in that.
No, just yours.
Oh, wow.
I can't keep up with all yours. I listen to Horses in the Morning, Dressage Radio Show, Healthy Critters, which I love.
You love Healthy Critters?
I do. I love Healthy Critters.
Even that talking dog?
Not the first time I heard it. Now I do.
You know, it's funny. I've been asking everybody about the talking dog because I wanted an excuse, you know, because the talking dog used to drive me nuts, but now it's kind of grown on me too. So it's one of those things where everybody's saying the same thing about the talking dog. And everybody's saying the same thing. It's like they hated him at first, and now all of a sudden he's grown on them. So I don't know.
No, I agree with you completely. First episode, I thought, oh no, I won't listen to this one. And then now I think she's a scream because let's face it, we all own that dog.
That's right. I used to own that dog. That's for darn sure.
I think I need to catch up on Healthy Critters.
And Healthy Critters, that's a completely different show because they do spend a lot of time talking about different stuff than we talk about on the other shows. And Tigger is just like, she's like an encyclopedia of all things
isn't she?
Pet health. I mean, jeez.
Then I love the medical sort of that stuff. So it's a good balance.
Yeah.
But my go-to is still horses in the morning.
Well,
especially after Jamie's been riding on the weekend.
Nothing like that, girl. Hey, before we run out of time, it is the year of the listener. And if you've been listening to Stable Scoop, you know we have certain questions, that rapid fire questions.
Oh, yeah,
so you're going to get some of them. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay.
I am.
Favorite food?
Chocolate.
Yeah. Yay. Good pick. Least favorite food?
Oh, it has to be Brussels sprouts.
No, I love Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
No, can't stand them.
Great to use for hockey pucks.
Hey, post them to me.
Yeah, I will. No problem. Well boiled. They're on the way.
Okay, how about what is your biggest equestrian pet peeve? What bugs you about other equestrian people or horses?
The dressage diva in me comes out. Dirty tack.
Ah.
I hate dirty tack.
Yeah, you would have been a good pony clubber.
I instructed for a few years at pony club, so maybe that's where that came from.
That's where that came from.
The A-type.
It rubbed off.
Yeah, it did.
What's the most terrifying thing you've ever done, and horse or not, and would you do it again?
Most terrifying horse thing was when I did my instructor certificate for Pony Club and I had to jump an 80 centimeter jump on my daughter's 15 hand pony who hated me. That was probably the most terrifying thing I've ever done. Non-horse related was I got the opportunity to go underground in a coal mine for work. That was terrifying.
Yeah.
And stood on the machine under there while it moved. So
Either you're into that or you're not. I mean, there's no in-betweens with that. I used to be a spelunker. I used to go caving. So I was kind of into it, but Jennifer would never do it
either. No, couldn't do it. You can't pay those guys enough money to go under there.
It's dirty, crappy work.
Mm.
If you could have just one superhero power, what would it be?
I'd teleport so I could get to work.
Yes.
That would be my superpower.
You're posting that to me with the Brussels sprouts.
Yes.
Beam me up, Scotty.
And I'd be happy if it was only Monday to Friday and it was limited time slots. Just to and from work would suit me, my superpower.
It'd save you 2 hours a day. You'd be there.
Would.
Yeah.
Riding
definitely.
Time.
Yes.
They haven't come up with flying cars yet. I think we're a long way from transporters at this point.
Pity, isn't it?
So we're a ways away. Well, this has been fun. Thank you so much for joining us today. Go out and give your big guys a hug for us.
I will. I'll tell them they're superstars.
And thank you so much for being a listener number one and for being an auditor too. We appreciate all of our overseas auditors. You guys really do make this job so much fun, as being in that room with you guys and following everything you talk about. It's really neat.
Oh, thank you. I think you lot saved my sanity driving to and from work. In fact, I'm sure of it. Yeah.
Well, we're glad we could help.
And that has nothing to do with the Horse Hubbies episode, which I'm not listening to.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure you're not listening to it. No women are allowed. No.
No, no, I never listen. No.
Thanks, Anne.
Thanks so much, Anne.
Jeff Sayward back with us, and we're doing another law tip today. So what are we talking about today?
Okay, Glenn. So today we're going to talk about knowing your seller. One issue I've had come up in a lot of matters lately for me is I've got a client. The client is in a dispute about a horse that they purchased. They don't actually know the identity of the seller. Unfortunately, this seems to be more common than you would think. So I'd just like to go over a few tips for people to try to prevent this problem from happening.
That's an interesting. I never thought about that because I've always at least known who the seller was.
Surprisingly, a lot of people don't. And there are several reasons for that. First of all, if they don't have a written contract, then they may not have actually confirmed the true identity of the seller of the horse. Second of all, people might own different things in different capacities. So, for example, the horse might be owned by them in their individual capacity, or it may be owned in their business's name, and there are different types of businesses as well. So what I advise is, first of all, you should always have a written contract. And second of all, if you can, you should do just a little bit of research about the seller to prevent yourself from maybe entering into an agreement that in the end might be very difficult to dispute. So, for example, you need to ascertain whether the seller is a company or an individual. A lot of people in the horse industry trade as sole traders, so they may have what's called an ABN, which is an Australian business number, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're a company. Now, this information you can get easily online. You can, if you just Google ABN lookup, that will take you to the government website, and if you put that person's ABN in, you'll be able to see what type of entity that is. If that's a company, then you'll also be able to follow the link to the ASIC website, and that will allow you to see if that company is still registered, if that company is already in liquidation. These sorts of things can impact your ability to recover from them later. So it's useful information, and it only takes a second.
Do you run into this a lot where there's a broker involved?
Yes, that's right. The other problem is that if there's an agent involved, then sometimes the buyers don't even realize sometimes that the agent's actually not the owner. It's not made clear from the beginning. And that's another reason why it's good to clarify this, so that if you then end up in a dispute later on because, say, you bring the horse home and then the horse is lame in a week and the vet says the problem's already been there and you want to contact them and try to, say, return the horse or get your money back or what have you, you need to actually know who you're contacting. So you need the actual identity of the seller of the horse, and you also need the contact details. And if you have a written agreement, all of that stuff will go into the written agreement so that you won't forget to ask. So we always recommend that, so that the terms are certain and you know who to chase if you have a problem later on.
Can legally, if there's a broker involved or an agent or, you know, whatever you want to call them, a dealer, if there's one of those involved, can they legally sign the contract, or does it have to be the owner that signs the contract?
They might be given authority by the owner to do so.
But how would you know that?
Their arrangement. So what you need to do is, in your contract, you need to have a section that sets out all of the details about the horse, and that will include who the registered owner of that horse actually is.
Got it.
That's important because the agent is acting for the seller, but you need to know who the actual owner of the horse is in case the thing that is in dispute might come down to the seller, not so much the agent, has possibly misrepresented the horse. Sometimes the sellers might put the ads out. The agent might just be there to show you the horse and to ride it so you can watch.
Are there situations where the seller doesn't want his name out there for whatever reason?
possibly. Although if the seller doesn't want his or her name out and attached to that horse, I would wonder what the problem is.
Red flag.
If he should be buying that horse.
Big red flag.
That could be a definite red flag
so
to you.
What do you
they
do?
They don't want to even admit to owning the horse.
What do you, so, in other words, it's going to cost you more because then it, if you don't know who the owner is, you want to go back on them, then you have to do the research to figure out who did own the horse in the first place.
Yes, that's right. And you might unfortunately find when you start looking that that owner has since, you know, become insolvent or disappeared off the planet and you can't find them. It happens.
That doesn't happen in the horse business.
So, unfortunately, you do want to get all these details clear from the beginning. And as we've spoken about before, we always encourage, you know, a written contract, and all of these details will be in that written contract. Because, unfortunately, I've had a lot of matters where the only contact details that people have for the seller are Facebook messages. And they have no actual address or proper contact details for this person or the business. Sometimes they're not even sure if it is actually a business or the person that owns the horse. So all of these are problems. If you get into a dispute later, so you just need to clarify all of this.
Got it. Very good. Well, tell everybody where they can find you.
Okay, so you can go to our website, chamberlains.com.au. You can send me an email, sayward.brest@chamberlains.com.au. We also have a Facebook page, Equine Legal Services Chamberlains Law Firm. You can just put that in the search bar on Facebook and we'll come up. And please like our Facebook page. We post blogs about these and other topics. So you can do a little reading and do your research beforehand if you need a sale contract or an adjustment contract or anything of that sort, or you're in a dispute, please contact me and I will help you.
Always, always, always have an agreement or a contract when you're buying or selling a horse. It will come back to bite you
That's
if you
right.
don't. And I'm always surprised that people say, well, I only paid $1,000 for it, or I only paid, you know, $500 for it. We get a contract on every horse we sell or buy, because as a seller, you also want protected. So it's...
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Both parties need protection. And one thing I have run into quite a bit in my practice is buyers... for various reasons, not being happy with the purchase and wanting to return the horse. And the issue of returning the horse can easily be dealt with in the contract, which means you've discussed it beforehand and everyone knows what the agreed terms are in that regard. And that is much easier to do at the beginning rather than when there's a problem.
Well, we thank Chamberlain's Law Firm for joining us every month with the legal tips. We appreciate that. And we're also sponsored this month by Remote Coach. What's going on over there?
Well, Remote Coach, since I've moved, I haven't actually been writing much because I've been riding, well, and playing with my horse, which has been very exciting. But I have actually... used use the audio downloads myself when I've been riding for some training tips with legs. So they really just, they're audio downloads you can purchase straight off the internet and have on your phone instantly. They're all under $10 Australian and they just give you some ideas for your ride, some structure to your ride, exercises to do, checking in with your riding position, particularly for me because I haven't been riding for so long. It's a little weird hearing my own voice in my head, but it works nonetheless. And just they're between half an hour and 40 minutes. They give you lots of different ideas. There are lots of different recordings. So there are ones specifically on transitions, specifically on serpentine, specifically on little dressage test common errors, I find, and as well as the remote ride series, which are just three or four exercises of varying levels for your everyday ride. So they really give you some structure to your ride. They're nice and cheap, and you can just pop them on your phone and off you go.
Very good. And what's the website again?
The website is www.remote-coach.com. So remote-coach.com or Remote Coach on Facebook.
Very good. Tell us a little bit about our next guest coming up and this class that she's going to be in.
Jess Stalling is a show and jumping rider, and I wanted to have a chat about the class that she's just come second in at the Royal Melbourne Show, which is a class very familiar to Australians, but probably not to the rest of your audience, called the Gary Owen. So the Gary Owen's primarily a, well, it's been primarily known as a turnout class, but it is named after a horse called Gary Owen, who was owned by a lady called Violet Murrell in the 20s and 30s. And it's been running since 1934. Gary Owen won many jumping and showing classes in his life. And Violet, I think Violet was a bit of a goer. In the 1920s and 30s, she was point-to-pointing. She was winning against male jockeys in picnic races because, obviously, female jockeys weren't allowed on flat races at the time. She ran a campaign to be allowed to ride in the city meetings. And she showed as well. So she was really an absolute all-round equestrian. And in 1934, there was a stable fire at their home, and Violet died saving Gary Owen, who also passed away, and her husband also passed away a few days later from burns that he received in the fire. So the Gary Owen really does honour her memory and the love she had for her horse and the ability she had as an all-round equestrian. So it's been running since 1934, and riders are judged on that 1930s turnout. So they're out there. I mean, fortunately, well, this is probably the only class of the whole Melbourne Royal that you are happy that it was raining and wet, because they're wearing, you know, heavyweight 22-ounce cavalry twill and jackets and 18-ounce cavalry woolen twill breeches. So you can imagine that in a 30-degree day. I'm not sure what 30-degree is in your numbers, Glenn. That would be like 80, maybe?
Yeah, pretty hot.
75, yeah. 80? Yeah. So, you know, not so much fun riding out there in your woolen coat and breeches. So the costume, you know, the riders are judged on the horses. There are five judges. So one does the horses' conformation and soundness. One does their manners and paces. There's a saddlery judge. There's a costume judge. And literally the riders are taken off their horses and the costume is analysed. And analysed is really the only word. It's a pretty big deal. There's a riding judge and then that general appearance. So you can imagine the expense that goes into not only having a horse suitable for the class, but to outfit yourself in tack and clothing. And Jess Stalling, our next guest, in the first year she competed, which was this year, not only came second, but she was equal first. They had to keep counting back on different marks to find the difference. So she came second and was the highest first-year entrant. And people compete in this class for years trying to place. I mean, it's a very, very competitive class with a lot of history in it for Australians. So she really has done had a massive show at Royal Melbourne. She also won Champion Lady Rider. She won the Pope Cup. Her horse, Tattinger, won Champion Hack. And then she also made the jump off in the World Cup show jumping. So she's really, you know, showing what Viral Murrell was as an all-round horsewoman. So welcome, Jess Stalling. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us out of what's a fairly busy schedule, I imagine, just at the moment.
Yeah, it is pretty busy at the moment, yes, very busy.
So you had an amazing Royal Melbourne show. You won Champion Lady Rider, the Pope Cup, Champion Hack, and were second placed and highest placed first time in the Gary Owen, and you also made the jump off in the World Cup show jumping. Did I miss anything?
yeah, I actually finished fourth in the World Cup qualifier as well.
Far out.
Yes. And on with a different horse, I won the lady tack as well with a different horse who he was champion at Adelaide Royal 2 weeks prior. And with one of our ponies, he got champion large show hunter pony. And we got reserve champion show hunter Galloway with a different horse as well. So, yeah, we had a pretty successful show.
Jeez, Jess, you didn't have time for 20 more classes thrown into that schedule?
No, not really. And in between the showing and the jumping, I actually flew home to do it, to do a show for one day.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
In the middle of that, I also missed my flight both ways as well.
Welcome to the life of a professional show jumper, right?
Yep.
Wow. So how many horses did you take down to Melbourne?
We had a total of 10 horses down there, yes.
Far out. You weren't platting them all, were you? Someone else did that.
No. We have a great team of workers and staff that do a lot behind the scenes. So fortunately, I don't have to do all the platting.
Great. So your champion hack and the horse you rode in the Gary Owen is a horse called Tattinger. Tell me about him. Is he an off the? Did he come through as a racehorse?
Yes, he is a ex-racehorse. He had a very limited career. I believe he didn't have much success on the track, He came off quite early. He's had a fairly limited career. He hasn't sort of been shown too much. I sort of don't like to take good horses out too much. But, he was off the track from well-known show people, Darren Telford and Greg Geary. And Ben was with Laura Thomas for a while. I purchased him off Laura in April last year. And he's pretty much, he's only been beaten once since I've owned him. So, pretty happy with that.
yeah. And had you been preparing for the Gary Owen for a long time? Because obviously there's a whole lot of organisation in what you're wearing, regardless of what the horse is doing. Had you been collecting that costume and that clothing for a long time?
Well, it's actually quite a funny story in itself, our Gary Owen preparation. I had entered back in May when the entry shut I've always wanted to do and thought, now I've got the right horse, this is our time. Consequently, I'm getting married in 3.5 weeks and, plus running the business and doing all the shows. As it was sort of getting closer, I was thinking, no, I've made the wrong decision here. Like, I don't have time to prepare and get everything sorted, so we'll just forget about it. But I just thought I'd let it, I was entered, so, I just thought I'll scratch one and get down there. No one will actually believe this, but I had no intention of going in it. A lot of people asked me, oh, I see you're entered for the Gary Owen, like, that's great, good luck. I'm like, oh, no, sorry, I'm not actually going in it. I don't have any gear, which I didn't. It was only the two nights before that, Sarah Love, who was a previous Gary Owen winner, said to me the same thing. Oh, I see you entered to the Gary Owen. That's great. And I said, oh, yes, but I'm not starting. I don't have any gear. And, sort of long story short, one of our clients drove 2 hours up to Sarah's place to pick up her gear for me to try on, hoping that it would all fit. And luckily it did fit pretty well. It must have fit well because I did get 4 marks in my costume.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And there was sort of, my mum flew down from home with the horse's bridle and saddle was borrowed. And, it all sort of came together within 36 hours, which no one will probably believe, but is, the absolute truth. I actually had to get one of my girls to go up and grab my draw at the high tee on my behalf because I was actually competing at the time. And I thought, well, maybe we just better get it just in case this gear does work out, which I still hadn't tried on by the high tee the time it was on. So, even the night before, I was like, oh, I don't feel confident about this. If we try get it all on in the morning and I'm not happy, I'm not going in. It's something you can't go in, half-heartedly.
Exactly.
With that night, we had a few celebrations after, such a successful day with the champion hack and the Pope and the ladies and whatnot, and I woke up in the morning not feeling so well. I thought, I'm definitely not doing this. And Reese, my partner, he's like, no, you have to, everyone's gone to too much effort, you have to. And I'm like, I was vomiting all morning, and it was quite an unbelievable story. And yeah, anyway, our team, we got the horse ready, and literally right at the last minute, he was still getting plattered as I was getting on him, and we actually did have to chop the bottom bit of his mane because he didn't have time to get the last plat in as my heat was going in the ring. I didn't have any warm-up. I was thinking the only first that I was going to get in the Gary Owen would be the first person to vomit while riding. However, anyway, that didn't happen, thankfully. And, he gave me a beautiful ride. I was sort of one of the best workouts he's given me. So I was pretty happy with that. And at that time, I sort of thought, oh, well, the rest is up to the judges. I couldn't do any more. And, it was great to sort of win the first year. I think I was very happy to, we were equal first on points and still equal after the first count back. To get second by 1 point in my first year overall, I was pretty happy, but still a little frustrated that it was so close. I definitely only wanted to do the Gary Owen once, but anyway, I think it's something that you sort of have to earn your stripes, to take the win. A first year is never taken out the overall award. So I think I'll be back next year.
It's a bit of a rite of passage, really, as a show rider in Australia, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I think it's Bryony's been doing it, I think, for eight years. And then won it after 8 years. So it's something, definitely got to earn your stripes to take the title, I think.
Sure. And so then you swap from that and hop on your show jumper. There aren't many show riders that do this.
the rider class was on the same day after the Gary Owen, and I was sort of thinking, oh, maybe I'll just call a day. My horse had sort of done quite a few classes, more than I was planning on. I did the Pope, and he won that, and I thought that was a qualifier for champion. And then I was hoping to only then, be able to go into the champion, but then I was told that the Pope now didn't qualify for the championship, so I had to do another class. So I put him in the gelding class, which he won. So he sort of had to do a few more classes than I was hoping. I thought, don't want to push it too much, he's not used to sort of doing so many classes. But anyway, at the last minute, I did decide to do my riding class.
Yeah.
And, that was won that and got champion, which was great. So that was our, last show horse class. And then the jumping kicked in on Thursday. And then, had a really good show leading up. I didn't get to jump on the Saturday, the day before the World Cup, because that's the day I flew back to Sydney for a show.
Right.
For our state championship show. And then I flew back Saturday night and did the World Cup on Sunday. And I couldn't be happier with my horse. He jumped, super.
So tell me a little bit about your show jumper. How many horses are you running at World Cup level?
I've just got the one World Cup horse at the moment. We, between my partner and I, we have three Grand Prix horses. We've just had to sadly retire one of his young horses, who was about to have a first World Cup start. But I've got four show jumpers myself that are going. We started breeding about 5 years ago now, so our first crop year of five-year-olds. From there on in, we've got them that are coming from right through down to unborn, and the breeding season has already started again this year. So frantically breeding.
Wow. How many mares are you foaling down each year there?
Usually it's sort of about five or six a year is sort of what we work off. It's a lot harder because we majority only breed with our competition mares, it's all by embryo transfer. And then it's got the surrogate mother. So yeah, it's a little bit trickier, but I think it's worth it. I think the dam line is very important. They're definitely the best mares for sure.
Well, congratulations. And as I said in the intro before we had you on the phone, you really do. I think Violet Murrell would have been very happy because she was a mad point-to-pointer from what I've read, and having a show rider come so close to winning her award in the first year as well as being a show jumper would certainly make her smile, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, no, I believe, yeah, that, you know, yeah, she was a very, you know, talented rider from what I've read also. And, yeah, no, I definitely something I do want to strive towards winning, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, congratulations and thanks so much for taking the time to have a chat with us today.
No, that's fine. You're welcome. Thanks very much for having me on.
Well, the crazy life of a jumper.
A jumper and a show rider.
Yeah.
Just because, yeah, and breeding, just wow.
Yep, the crazy life.
When does
she
sleep?
Just nonstop. They're just nonstop all the time. It makes me on edge when I go to Wellington in the winter because it's just bizarre.
It must be like another world.
It is.
We don't really have a Wellington. I guess people go from here to Wellington, but we don't have a Wellington in Australia. So I guess the weather is sort of temperate enough to stay in the one place year round. But I can't imagine. It must be crazy.
If you imagine going to a showgrounds that people are there for almost 3 months and there are thousands of them every day showing. And they're just everywhere. It's just...
Yeah, no. Not a three-month-long show doesn't sound like my idea of
It is an interesting experience. Let's just say that. I could not spend all season. I think you'd have ulcers. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's true.
It is crazy. Yeah. It's its
they
own
must sell
world.
A lot of Xanax around Wellington.
Yeah, probably. And everything else.
Yeah, well.
All right, well, that's it for this episode of the Aussie episode that we do every month. We appreciate
your
you joining.
Aussie accent.
My Aussie accent. And we appreciate you. I did that. I just flow into that. I didn't even try. So if you missed all the past Aussie episodes, just head over to Horses in the Morning and search Australian and you'll bring them all up, or search Fiona and you'll bring them all up and you can take a listen to some of the past episodes we've done. Fiona's here the first Saturday of every month and we thank you for listening to this special Saturday edition. You can find Fiona at
remote-coach.com or via the Facebook page just at Remote Coach.
And you can find Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com or listen on our app. It's the easiest way to listen to the show. We have a lot of listeners in Australia that listen on our app. It's iOS or Android. Just search for Horse Radio Network. Horses in the Morning is one of the shows on the app. We thank our guests today. We also thank Remote Coach and Chamberlain's Law for joining us as sponsors. That's it for this month. We'll see you all again in the world down under next month. Bye, Fiona.
Bye.